We're starting our second semester of Abayit Ayudi in the Jewish home. And this class is thanks to a girl that one of the guys from here dated. They didn't get married, but she called me up one day and she said, the guys are learning at the Machon and they're learning a lot of important things, and who am I to say anything, but I have a feeling when I'm dating this guy that he has no clue what a Jewish home is supposed to look like. And everything that they're learning is very good and very important, but when it comes time to talking about what a Yom Tov looks like and what a Shabbos table looks like, what a Jewish home looks like, I feel like they don't have it. So I took her words to heart, and we discussed it, and we decided we have to start a class on the Jewish home. So I said, great, maybe this Rav should give it, or that Rav should give it, or that Rav should give it. And they all said, uh-huh. And they pointed a finger the other way. So that's how our class began. I have said before, and I say it again, that there are many styles to the Jewish home. There's no one style. There are certain things that you'll find in most homes, and it's nice to have it in your home as well. But the spirit of the Jewish home is something which I don't know how to convey in a class. That's why I want other people to give it. It's one of the reasons I want other people to give it. But I'm not sure it could be conveyed in a class. And that's why I say many, many times, I'm saying again, try to go to Jewish homes for Shabbos. Try to go see homes. Every home I visited, I tried to take something from. And I grew up, Baruch Hashem, from home. And nonetheless, I can tell you there are things I do at home, which I saw in other people's homes. I didn't see it at home. I saw beautiful things in my house, and you all saw certain things which are beautiful in your homes. Take them. Take them with you. But every home you go to, you should look and see and learn things from them. Look at how the parents discipline their children. Look at how the parents interact. Look at how the parents treat one another. Some homes you learn what to do from, and some homes you learn what not to do from. But from every home you should learn, and you should take advantage of every opportunity you have to go to people's homes. Be it Rabbeim here, or even not Rabbeim here. Any couple that is running a home that's based on tradition. I'm not encouraging you to go look for homes which guys who don't have tradition, who are coming from the Machon. They're wonderful people, and I have the greatest respect for them. And I'm not coming to belittle them. But the tools that you need to get for building your own homes, you're going to find in homes that are continuing the tradition. And it's very hard to continue the tradition if you don't have where to take it from. So go to people's homes. And I don't care what kind of home you grew up in, you're always going to come to homes where you could learn new things from. I remember the home where I saw where the husband waited for his wife before he started eating the food. So he ate cold food. I remember the home where the husband didn't wait for his wife, but didn't want his wife to get the last portion, always the smallest portion, or the portion that no one else wanted. So when they'd bring the dishes to the table, the first thing he'd do is take from the portions and put it on his wife's plate. So she got the best portion. She's the one that baked it all. She's the one that cooked it all. Why shouldn't she get the best portion? Why should she get last dibs? So I remember that. I saw that. I remember the home where the husband made sure to compliment his wife and thank her for everything she did. Every home I went to, I tried to take mental notes and say, this is what I want to see in my home. This is what I don't want to see in my home. I remember the home where the husband made cracks at his wife's expense. So I remember the home where the wife made cracks at her husband's expense. I remember the home where they both treated one another beautifully when they were both there. But when the husband was late by 15 minutes to the Shabbos meal, boy, was the wife talking about him. Made a mental note of that too. You could learn from every home you go to. Keep your eyes and ears open. Look, listen. Make mental notes, and learn from it. We're going to try to raise many issues here. But like we mentioned in the class in the beginning last semester, there was a couple that were getting divorced, and the wife came to the court, and she said, Rabbis, I want a divorce. So they said, what's wrong? And in Jewish tradition, when a woman asks for a divorce or a husband asks for a divorce, the first thing we do is we say, wait. And we try to see if we can make amends. One rabbi who does divorces for people once told me, he said, I'm the worst businessman. A couple comes in and tells me they want a divorce. I could set up everything, all the legal stuff, in 2 hours. We could have the divorce done in 4 hours. I made my $800 and I could go home. Instead, I say, I'll meet you tomorrow. And I meet with the wife for 3 hours. And then I tell the husband, I'll talk to you the next day. And I meet him for 3 hours. And then I meet with both of them. And then we start counseling sessions. And then I find out if they went to counseling. And after investing 6 months with this couple, every week I invest 6 hours with them. Finally, they continue their marriage and I don't see a penny. So I'm the worst businessman. But that's what a rabbi has to do. The job is to try and figure out how to make things work, not to set up, say, okay, that's what you want. Okay, tomorrow you'll have your divorce. No, let's see if we can make it work. But this woman walks into the rabbi and she says, I want to get divorced. So the rabbis tell her what's wrong. She says, my husband's nuts. So they say, what's wrong with him? She says, well, I'll give you an example. Friday night at Kiddush, he sits and he makes Kiddush, and before he drinks from the wine, he sticks his eyes into the cup and then he drinks. So they call the husband in and they tell him, tell us, what are you doing, Kiddush? So he says, I finished the blessing, I dip my eyes in the cup, I take a drink. So they ask him, why do you do that? So he says, what do you mean? Open up Shulchan Aruch. What does it say? It says, Yiten enav because Shabbachai. So Yiten enav literally means you should place his eyes in the cup of blessing. What the Shulchan Aruch means is you should look at the cup. When you make a blessing, you don't look up in the outer space and make a blessing. So he said, but that's what it says. Put your eyes in the cup of blessing. So this guy didn't grow up in a traditional home, or else he thought he could second guess his home. True story. I heard it from the rabbi who was on the court. True story. I could also tell you the story about the wife who came into court and said, I want a divorce. So they told her, why do you want a divorce? She said, my husband isn't man enough. They said, why? What do you mean he's not man enough? She said, my sister, she married a guy, he's a man. When he comes home, he bangs on the table. When he has a point, he yells. And when he gets upset, he slams her. So my husband, he speaks gently. True story. So she also didn't grow up in a traditional home. Don't think that there are many wives like this out there. Most wives, if the husband would treat them like this woman's sister, they'll file for abuse and divorce, and rightfully so. But on the other hand, she had a misconstrued conception of what a husband is supposed to, how he's supposed to treat his wife. Now, you're all laughing, but the Gemara says that what's an Am HaAretz? An Am HaAretz, the Gemara curses a person who marries his daughter off to an Am HaAretz. Why? The Gemara says because an Am HaAretz makeh uvoed. He smacks his wife and then he goes to have marital relations with her. So that seems pretty crude. But in essence, what is the Gemara telling us? That if a person doesn't have the Torah, then he's going to think his wife is someone he could smack. And he's going to think that having marital relations with her is something that he does because that's what he feels like doing when he feels like doing, nothing to do with love. And in truth, the Jewish home is being bombarded with a barrage of attacks from outside. We're seeing problems that we never saw before. And many of them stem from the fact that people are entering marriage with misconceptions. And the misconceptions we illustrated seem funny. But the misconceptions that the average person is entering marriage with are not funny, even though they are misconceptions. And they are not the formula which will lead to happy marriage. Every marriage requires work, but it also requires a certain attitude. Every one of us is accustomed to walking in the street and seeing all the ads that describe love as being something completely physical. I could quote you, I was in someone's bathroom this past Shabbos, that a Reader's Digest. So I look, they have a section over there that have quotes. And that quote's on love. And every single quote there stressed the physical. I was amazed. Like, these are supposed to be intelligent quotes. People that the American society is emulating. And I didn't have the guts to ask the host if I could take that Reader's Digest. I might have the courage next week to ask them. I want to bring you the quotes. You should just see what seemingly intelligent people are saying about love. And I didn't notice the issue number, but people say things like, I don't even remember the lines. Love, in many of the definitions over there, began with the word me or I, and everything was her in relation to me, and no one over there stressed the giving. In Judaism, we discuss love as being something that begins after marriage. It doesn't even begin before marriage. when guys come to me and tell me they're ready to get engaged, I love this girl. So I listen, I talk to them, and some point within our conversations, I try to tell them, look, I really hope that you're going to learn what love is, because it's not what you have now. What you have now cannot be love. You might love yourself right now, and you might think that she's going to give you 100 things which you want, and that's why you want to marry her. But if you think that's called loving her, you're not loving her. You're not seeing beyond yourself. All of us love ourselves. The first and only love that we know the minute we're born is ourselves. And that's important. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to live. Like Hillel told us, the formula for love, for life, imena nili, if I'm not for myself, mili, who's going to be for me? I have to first worry about myself. And that's my first worry. Child is born, he's egocentric. If he hears yelling in the room, he cries. He assumes everything revolves around him. As a child grows up, he starts discovering there are other people. Now, all those other people he measures as people that they're all like tentacles. They extend from him. If he sees a person upset, he's sure it's because of him. He's ready to cry. If he sees his parents fighting, he's sure it's because of him. Everything he sees in relation of himself. He grows a little bit, and he starts recognizing that other people have feelings too. They're still an extension of him. The average person here, if he speaks to someone, any person, be it the clerk at a store, or his chavrusa, or a rebbe, or a sibling, or a parent, if that person's going to be upset, the first thought that every person thinks is still, why is he upset at me? We're still accustomed to viewing the world in light of ourselves. It's very hard for us to recognize that maybe he's upset because he had a bad day. Maybe he's upset because he woke up on the wrong side of the bed. His wife yelled at him. His kid just flunked the test. He just failed the driving test. It's very hard for us to visualize any reason why anyone's going to be upset other than something that has to do with me. And of course, when we speak to someone and they're happy and the conversation goes well and everything's hunky-dory, we automatically assume, oh, he loves talking to me. Maybe he's just a nice person. We assume everything is in relation to ourselves. We outgrow that egocentrism to an extent, but we never outgrow it fully. Now, that's dangerous because we want to build a relationship. We want to give truly. Then we have to outgrow it completely. We have to be able to see the other person and be able to give to the other person. And of course, one person who a friend of mine saw, I was preparing the class on this, so he said, what are you going to do? You're going to sit there and just work on everyone's perfecting their traits? So in truth, that's really what we have to do here, because a good home is built on good people. People who are not nice people are not, they don't stand a chance of having a good home. People who are nice people won't necessarily have a good home, because the fact that you could get along with a roommate and a friend and everyone else doesn't mean you're going to be able to get along and be a good husband. So the purpose of this class is to try and deal with, on one level, ourselves and the obstacles that every person has to overcome. And on another level, understanding this entity of marriage that we're entering and understanding how to build it and how to try and understand our wives and do what's best for them. There are many books coming out now. Men Are From Mars. He Said, She Said. That's Not What I Said, That's Not What I Meant. That happens to be a very good book. It's Not What I Said, It's Not What I Meant. Her name, the one who wrote that is called, I forgot her name, she's a Jew. What's her name? I don't remember, but Juan?
Dr. Laura?
No, not Dr. Laura, no. Judy something. No. I don't remember her name. Her research is the one that the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus is based on. It's her research. I don't remember the author, but the name of the book is That's Not What I Said, It's Not What I Meant. If you want, you can borrow it. I think I even have it.
Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. These two books.
It's one book. They say it's a good book. I haven't read it yet. But we're going to try in this class to get the Jewish perspective on how to build a good Jewish home and also a lot of practical applications. So let's begin and we're going to end the class with your input. Last semester, guys brought up very important topics that they wanted addressed. We tried to address most of them. And this semester, we're also going to begin with the same question. Tell me which topics you want to address. People had certain issues about mother-in-laws they wanted addressed. We tried to address them, some directly and some between the lines. People had certain issues about family, who to respect, how to treat sister-in-laws, different fights. We tried to address most of that. If people who are following on the internet feel that we didn't address their issues enough or at all, they're welcome to email and we'll try to address it. And guys here should think while we talk, think about if there are issues you want us to address, you could write them down. If you don't feel comfortable saying them out loud, you could email me, you could give me a paper. But at the end of the class, we'll go around and whoever has something to add, let me know. Let's begin. This is our 9th class, by the way, for those of you who need it for your notes. Our sages record that when one of the great Tanoim was about to pass away, so his disciples, his students, I think it was Rabbi Yochanan, his student said, Rabbi, bless us. Give us a blessing. So he said, may it be the will of Hashem that you fear your fellow man, that you fear God like you fear your fellow man. So they said to him, that's it? So he said, halavai, I wish it were that much. If you get that much, you've gotten a lot. I'll prove it to you, he said. Because when a person does something that's wrong, so he says, ooh, my friend shouldn't see me. A guy goes onto an internet site where he shouldn't be, or a guy eats something he shouldn't eat, or says something he shouldn't say, or does something he shouldn't do. He says, he looks behind his shoulder, he says, no one should see me. But he doesn't think God shouldn't see me. So he said, you see that, and he said this to his students, people who were big Talmidei Chachamim, he said, you see that the average Talmid Chacham doesn't fear God like he fears his fellow man. So if only you get that, you've gotten a lot. We say, Kol ma'asecha l'shem shamayim. Everything you do should be for the sake of heavens. I once dated a girl who told me she doesn't eat anything unless that's what she should be doing now, for the sake of heaven. So I was young and naive, and I believed her. And I asked, well, you don't eat bamba? You never eat bamba? So she said, no. So I said, you never eat beastly? And she said, no. So you never eat chocolate? She said, I don't know, maybe if they serve it like on a Shabbos meal dessert, I guess, yeah. So I believed her. She dumped me. Like, I didn't dump her. I believed her. But she dumped me. And a few years later, I tried to offer her a shidduch. Like, I said, okay, she's not for me, but maybe I have friends. Maybe she's for them. And as we started talking, and I said, you know, this guy has these great qualities, maybe this is for you, etc. I started hearing what she was looking for, and I was thinking, wait a second, if everything you're doing is for the sake of heavens, how come you're looking for this, and how come this is important to you, and how come you didn't mention 10 other things that should be important for you? And I suddenly started seeing that, hey, she wasn't being truthful to herself. We all kid ourselves. We all lie to ourselves. The Gemara has a rule, Adam karov etzel atzmo, your closest relation is yourself. The Gemara says that a person is therefore not believed regarding himself. Even if Moshe Rabbein would walk into court and try to testify about himself, we wouldn't believe him. There's no person who could say he's not close to himself. So we're going to try to discuss building a home for the sake of heaven. If a person enters the home and his first focus is himself, it's going to be tough, because our sages tell us that our wife mirrors us. Now, we're going to only spend 2 minutes on this topic, but this topic can solve many, I don't know if most, but many of marital issues, because, wow, Baruch haba. If a husband recognizes that his wife is mirroring him, then he'll realize that there isn't much room to get upset. The husband that walks in and says, she didn't leave me any of the good chocolate behind. I had a guy who came in like that. Said, she bought excellent chocolate. She didn't leave me a single piece. Turns out that the first week they were married, during Sheva Brachos, he did that to her. he didn't think she knew. She knew. Our sages say that Ihu beikare ve'itite beibutine. If he's eating big onions, she's eating small onions. What does the Gemara mean? The Gemara says, if he's cheating on her in a big way, she'll cheat on him in a small way. Wives have an intrinsic ability to sense where their husbands really are. They don't see it. When I was about to get married, I went to one of my rabbis, and he began, he said, they don't make them like they used to. So I'm thinking, really? I wasn't too happy to hear that. And he continued, he said, used to be, a guy got married, he could go learn for years, and his wife was willing to do everything in the house for his learning. But they don't make him like they used to. So I'm thinking, this is what you're telling me about my wife? I didn't say a word, I'm sitting there listening. He says, you know, they really don't make him like they used to. Once upon a time, you used to have real talmidei chachamim. Today, they just don't make husbands like they used to. So the wives, they're a mirror image of their husbands. I'm sitting there thinking the first few minutes, he's talking about her. No, he was talking about me. They don't make them like they used to. We, the husbands, he was telling me, we're no longer on the level that the Talmidei Chachamim were once. So our wives sense that. And when a husband is doing things in a pure sense, his wife will respond in the same sense. But when the husband is tainted with all kinds of his own, what I want, the capital I, so his wife also responds with the same tone. And this is a rule throughout life. Your wife is your mirror. People read the Gemara says that the wife is the substance and the husband is the shape. This is a Kabbalistic concept. This is a concept in philosophy that the husband is supposed to give the shape. So I speak to guys when they're dating and they say, she seems like a great girl. Whatever I'll say, that's what'll go in the house. So I think we could make it work. First of all, that never works. There's no such thing as a husband that whatever he says goes. I don't think there ever was. I don't think there ever will be. And I don't think it's even a good marriage if whatever he says goes. He was given an asset, the brilliant wife, who's going to help him if she's a partner. But there is the aspect where she's going to be the reflection of him. A guy who walks in and says, there isn't enough holiness in the house, so he should walk into a room and sit down and open a sefer and start being a holy person. He should learn how to be a holy person. If he'll be a holy person, she'll reflect that. The wife takes her cue from the husband. That's not to say she's not her own person. She is her own person. But wives have an amazing ability to match themselves to their husbands. And that's why you could see a woman who marries a guy and the first few years, big tzioni. Yom Ha'atzmaut, they got 15 flags flying out of the house. The car has a flag on every bumper, every side. And she says Hallel on Yom Ha'atzmaut with the greatest fervor. 3 years down the road, he joins Neturei Karta. Now he's flying out to hug Arafat and she's with him. Everything he does, 3 years later, he grows long payas. He decides he's going for breastlift. Stops at every traffic light, stands up, Nah, nach, Nachman, yells out, everyone be happy, don't you see what a beautiful world we got? And she's with him. So he says, he's nuts, but what's she? 3 years later, he joins the gra. Wears the long frack, wears tefillin under his hat, and you say, whoa, you guys think I'm joking? There was a true man like this. He passed away 5 years ago. I don't want to tell you who he is because you won't respect him anymore. But most of the world is trying to adopt his form of chinuch. He did go this zigzag path. And he built, in the end, he went the way of the Gra, and he built many batei midrash. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but only a very little bit about the way his life went. And he built one of the greatest dynasties of chinuch that is still around today. He had from his wife, I think, 17 children who are still around today. They all teach. He just passed away like 3 years ago. So you ask yourselves, how did she go with him? Like he learned, and every time he learned some more, he decided this is the right way. Because women see beyond the details. She saw he wanted to be a God-fearing person. She saw he wanted to be a good person. She saw he was being truthful to everything he learned. He tried to truthfully do what was right. So if his conclusion was that the truth was to be Chabad, so she went with him to Chabad. If he saw that the truth wasn't being Tzioni, she went with him to be Tzioni. If he saw that the truth was to be Breslev, she went with him to Breslev. Because she saw that he was being truthful. She saw that his heart was constantly trying to find what was right, and he was constantly trying to be a good person. And it was true. He really was trying to be a good person. And ultimately, he found the path which he decided was right, and he stuck to it. And for the rest of his life, he became a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Rabbeim from many yeshivas would go to his shir Thursday night. He'd have a class by the Kotel in Kabbalah, and this Hidden Secrets of the Torah. And people would come from all over the country to listen to his shir. Rashi yeshivas, from other yeshivas. You could only come by invitation. But they would come and listen to his shir all Thursday night. He would teach. And his wife went with him. She wasn't crazy, and neither was he. It took him time to find his way. But because he was truthful, she was willing to go with him. Women sense where we are. They don't... A guy once said, we don't have a driver's manual. We get married, and we're trying to figure out, what is this? How does this work? And they're born with our manual. They have it built in. They know exactly how we work. So don't expect it on the dates, and don't expect it in the beginning, but it's true. Yeah.
So how come the woman was the one who sent Rabbi Akiva away? I mean, she's the one who...
Yeah, it doesn't mean that a wife can't help her husband and guide him.
You're saying that the general rule is the other way around, the man is
the one. I'm saying that the man is going to give much of the shape in the house, and a smart man is going to let his wife lead him sometimes. The Gemara says that there are men whose wives lead them to Gan Eden, and there are men whose wives lead them to Gehenna. But we see that the wife leads. We're going to see. I didn't want to stop and look at the psukim, but we just learned in Navi about how a certain man married a certain girl by merit of the fact that he knew a certain amount of Torah, right? We read about Kalev, who said, whoever conquers these 3,000 halachos that were forgotten will have my daughter Achsa. So now the Navi has a very interesting terminology. The Navi says, he married it, he got Achsa, he got to marry her. And when she came, you remember what happened? What'd she say? We have dry land. We need the source of water. So the Pasuk says, Vatisiteu, she... so to speak, sicked him. She enticed him. She got him to go her way. She encouraged him. Lishon me'et avia, to ask from her father Hasadeh for that field that had the water sources in it. So who would you think is doing the asking? He or she? You read the first few words in the pasuk. She convinced him to ask her father, right? That's what the pasuk just said. How does the pasuk continue? Vatitznach me'alach hamo, she plopped down from on the donkey. Ve'omela Kalev malach. So Kalev asked her, what do you want? So she told her father, give me blessing. You gave me dry land. Give me the sources of water. So how come the pasuk began with her encouraging him to go ask her father when she actually went to ask her father? What went on here? Right? It's a logical question. What do you say, Daniel? So some learn, some they're shown
him.
Yeah.
She convinced him to ask her to go.
Possibly.
Fiddler on the roof.
Maybe. maybe she wouldn't do it without his agreeing. But she went to him and said, you know, we should really ask for this. So he said, gee, it sounds like a good idea. And when he gave his agreement, she went and did it.
Convincing that it's a good idea.
Yeah. Our sages say that some men listen to their wives and they follow them to Gan Eden. And some men listen to their wives and they follow them to Gehenna. A person has to know when to listen to his wife. But definitely the wife could lead the husband to Gan Eden. And Rabbi Akiva is a good example. I'm not saying that because you're going to shape the house, that's why you're the one that's going to lead to Gan Eden. Not necessarily. We have many, many stories in the Gemara of the wife leading to Gan Eden. And we have many stories of husbands who took counsel with their wives. But my point is that even Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says, how did the conversation begin? He came to her and he told her of how he saw the water dripping, breaking through the rock. And he said, if after so many years the water just dripping on the hard rock could make a hole in it, so then certainly the Torah, which is compared to water, could break through my heart. So who began the conversation? Who set the tone? Rabbi Akiva. What did his wife tell him? She said, you got potential. Go learn Torah. But even there, we see he started the conversation rolling that way. He could have come home and say, gee, you should have seen the game the Shepherds played today. I won the soccer match. I was the best defense. He was a terrible goalie. If he would have talked about that, I don't think his wife would have pushed him to go learn. The Gemara does record the beginning of the conversation. Women have strengths that men don't have. That's something we have to discuss. But we're really going already 15 minutes over time. So I want to leave you with a thought about the importance of this class. And then I want to go around and hear what guys want to address in this class. Did I tell you the example of Bill Gates? Okay. So imagine that guy walks into here and he walks up to you. Each one of you think the guy walks up to you and tells you, Bill Gates has heard that you're an expert in a certain field. He wants your advice on building a certain company. He wants to meet with you. He's considering doing a joint venture. What do you say? You have time in 3 weeks, say, to meet with him? Of course you say yes. And you set up a time. Now you have 3 weeks till that meeting with Bill Gates. What do you do during those 3 weeks?
Eat your nails.
Start brushing up on your knowledge. Start preparing your ties. Start doing research. What is Bill Gates like? What kind of meal should I take him out to? What should I discuss? How does he like being called? What's a big no-no? What gets on his nerves? How do I meet with Bill Gates and have the best chance at having him want to do this deal with me? As you approach the day of the meeting, you brush up on everything, you get a good night's sleep, you prepare. Our sages tell us that when a husband and wife get together, so God comes into the room. Ish v'isha, man and wife, zachu, if they've merited shechina b'neim, then God is between them. God's more important than Bill Gates. Bill Gates doesn't even come close. Doesn't hit the map. When we discuss marriage, we're discussing the potential to bring God into our homes and into our lives in a way that there's no couple. There's nothing that comes close. A good home, God is in the home. And it's worth preparing for it. That's what we're going to try to do here. Try to understand how we can build our home. And that's why it's worth preparing for it. We have an opportunity. The greatest asset we have is our home. And everything a person does, if he has a good home, he's going to enjoy it. And if when he comes home, his wife yells at him and everything, his house looks like, then everything else has a bad taste. Like one guy once told me, if you leave the house and your wife throws you a bad line, doesn't matter how well you're doing at work, doesn't matter how well you're doing at learning, everything doesn't seem good. And if right before you leave your house, your wife throws you a good line and things are going well, then everything else has a good taste, even when things don't seem so good. And it's also the other way around, of course. You could kill her day or make her day also. Goes both ways. So we're going to try to learn how to make our days and make our homes. And now I want to hear which topics guys want us to discuss. And okay. Uriel. During this class. I'll try to incorporate it in the classes. Topics about the home. Uriel, anything you want? Joshua? Michael? Ephraim?
Everything. I trust you guys.
Nachshon?
I think I need some time to think about it.
Think? Daniel?
Sheeple.
How? What?
Sheeple.
What does sheeple mean?
People like sheeples.
Oh. Tuvia? Matityahu? Avshalom? David?
I remember when, I think you already talked about it, when it was like with letting friends in the house, when you're married and when you're with your wife and you have a home with your wife, so on and so forth. I don't know, you do have kids or you don't around, and it's with like,
what do you mean that?
With like friends, it's like you've got your wife, but you're having friends over to the house. But sometimes you need space, you need to be alone, you need to be with your wife, you need to be with your friends. I think you mentioned it before. Yeah. I think it's something important to cover. Something. So,
okay.
Again, I think you're included.
No, there are aspects that I didn't cover. Okay, it's a good point. Yeah. Anything else? You could bring up more than one topic.
I covered this once. It's the right place for it. Tell us what are the duties from the wife to the husband, from the husband to the wife.
Wait, we're
what
gonna
you have to in marriage.
Okay.
With regards to the, we're going to do Mishnah in the class.
Now let's retake that vote.